Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
In terms of contract size, how many contracts are you using for these strategies? And are you doing a similar strategy with futures? So would you like go long two ES mini contracts and short two NASDAQ, or do you not touch the futures at all?
I personally don't trade the futures. I have managers that manage futures for me. I trade stocks, cryptos, and options myself.
Okay.
And I have other portfolios that trade options also for me and run a strangle selling strategy. So I don't trade futures personally. And then I have guys that trade different things, right, throughout different investments. So that's how I sort of stay diversified, so that the money that I am actually managing, like an individual account or a couple of different individual accounts, I can be more aggressive and more concentrated in those positions because I have other diversification and other strategies that are doing different things. Because something I learned over the years is that, the answer to your question is how many contracts, not on the future side, but on the option side, depends on the premium, right? Could be one or two, could be 10 or 20, could be 50, could be, you know, thousands, technically. You know, I had 2,000 contracts of these out of the money Mara calls. You know, I was like all the open interest myself at some point. At one point, I know. But anyway, so
it's lunch on you.
It depends on the situation. I didn't hold them long enough, for the record, story there. But nevertheless, at one point I did have I had 2,000 January 30 calls for Mara at one point. Anyway, so it just depends on the situation. But getting back to the diversification, you know, your real wealth diversification, in my opinion, by not just my work, my observations, but certainly work done by very smart people, but my observations as well, is having different strategies that are as uncorrelated with one another as possible. 3, 4, 5, you know, that 4 to 5 range mathematically seems to be like the sweet spot. Once you start getting more strategies than that, starts getting, you know, it's the law of diminishing returns or whatever. It's like being a basketball player, like, you know, maybe being 8 feet tall, it might have its advantages, but that's not really the ideal sweet spot. You know, maybe like a 6'9" with handles and can shoot from the out, you know, whatever. Right. You know, like there's kind of like a sweet spot where you want to be, you know, so that's kind of how I think about it. So anyway, 4 to 5 strategies, I think, is, so that's how I think about it.
Well, JC,
can I get one more?
I want to say something. I want to make a correction. So I said 180. I think I said 285 is in the money. So I misspoke if I said that. Mike, let me know. I meant 185 for, I know some people in the comments might.
Journalistic integrity.
I like it. Listen, I say all kinds of stuff that I live. I'm like, did I really say that?
It happens. If you talk every day, it happens. Yeah,
it happens, man. It happens.
JC, I wonder, in the your options portfolio, is it diversified amongst a multitude of companies, or are there like 10 or 11 companies that you follow and trade, right? Because, you know, we've talked about this prior. There's been scenarios where we've had strategies where we have options on the companies, the stocks that we have already invested in. What's kind of your sweet spot?
Yeah, so we run a couple of different strategies. So for one of them, where we just sell strangles, what we do is we don't actually use any stocks at all. It's only ETFs. So we take the 35 most liquid ETFs, you know them all, you know, EEM, SPY, XLK, you know, like, you know them all, or most of them anyway. So it's just those, because what that does, since we're selling strangles, we're selling naked calls and selling naked puts. So we're leaving ourselves exposed theoretically to, you know, major overnight gap risk that you'll get in stocks. That's relatively almost eliminated using ETF. So it's kind of like a risk management strategy in a strangle selling situation, where we don't have to worry about that. Right. So we just use the most liquid 35 ETFs. And what we'll do is we'll take the one with the highest implied volatility, the one paying the most, essentially, and sell that one. It's really that simple. And like you said, you know, and how we cover. So that's that strategy. And then in terms of the kind of like the more just buying and selling, you know, kind of adapting to the environment strategy, that is exactly what you said, about 10, 12 companies. Now, we don't focus on 10 or 12 companies that we specifically look to sell options. That's pretty much the basket of what the portfolio looks like. We are willing to trade any stock or ETF that is liquid enough to participate in. We don't care.
Okay.
Final question for you. Can you walk us through your be greedy for 2024 strategy? I'm curious.
Well, so
what are the thesis behind it?
So, you know, every year we get together and it's like, what did we learn? You know, what mistakes did we make? And, you know, I guess a common theme that kept coming up was, you know, not, you know, letting our we had some huge winners. And in some of those huge winners, we took some off the table too early. Our price targets were too conservative. And we just left money on the table that could have made a significant impact. So for example, traditionally we have always sold half of our calls as soon as the premium doubles. So if we pay $2 for the option and it's worth $4, we sell half and we let the rest run. And, you know, we'll raise our stops along the way. Now we won't sell half. We'll just raise our stops. Okay. For example, that's one way that we are sort of adjusting. And sometimes it's going to shake us out, right? And we know that. And sometimes it's going to bite us in the ass because we could have taken money off. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But we think that the longer term implications of letting some of those winners run will outweigh those little paper cuts we'll get.
On a year-over-year basis, how much more return do you think that would give you per year doing it that way?
Listen, it depends on the strategy, of course. In some strategies, there's no way to be greedier. They're just going to stay exactly the same. But in a situation like, you know, an options account, I mean, specifically in an options account, it can make a significant impact because some of these things can really, really appreciate. They could get, you know, these calls get in the money and the stock is running. I mean, I've witnessed huge moves in both directions, for the record. But, you know, huge, huge moves. So it can have a significant impact. Like, I mean, thousands of percent appreciation in an account potentially is not out of the question at all. Right. I'm not saying that I'm promising 10,000% returns or something, you know, but, I mean, that is the impact that you can potentially see in some of these positions, especially in some of those YOLO calls that we talked about before. If you're selling a strangle or you're selling, you know, putting together like a put spread or a call spread or something, you know, you're going to make a finite amount of money. It's a higher probability of success trade, but it's a finite amount of money. In the case where you can go out a year or two and buy cheap calls in something, 10, 15 points out of the money, and it gets 30, 40, 50 points in the money during that 2 year period, forget about it.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a time and a place. Those types of trades in a high volatility environment, you can't be doing that stuff, or you'll go broke right away.
Final question. Speaking of 10,000% return, what set of circumstances will we need to get to Kathy's proclamation of a 500,000 Bitcoin price or 1.5 for the bull case, you think?
Chart technician. I'll defer to her. I mean, she's smart. I'm sure she's done her homework to come up with that. Good for her. You know, let's get to 100 first, right? And then, you know, then we'll worry about it. And we have different time horizons, and her and I do different things. So, like, she's entitled to believe that. She could position accordingly. Her investors can follow her in that or not, right? Like, this is a free country. All of that is great. For me, that's great. She's obviously doing something, right? Good for her. For me, that is not what I do. Like, I do something else. Like, I'm interested in what's happening now. Like, our target was 47,000 on the Bitcoin. That was hit. We've seen rotation into Ethereum. You know, I think Ethereum goes to 3,800. You know, Bitcoin below 47 is kind of messy for a while. So I'm not really that interested in it. I'm interested in some of the other things. That doesn't mean I don't think Bitcoin goes higher. In fact, I do. I think we get back to 65 and rip through that and go to 100. Probably 120 is probably, you know, a good place to take a breather. I think that's how it plays out. But guess what? It doesn't matter what I think, right? We're stuck below 47. So I could tell you it's going to 120. I could tell you it's going to 10 million. It doesn't matter. We're still stuck below 47. So in the meantime, I'm kind of chilling out with Bitcoin. I'm looking at Ethereum and some of the others, you know, go down the list. Some of these other altcoins and stuff. Injective Protocol has been making a lot of new highs. TIA is another one. Some of these ICOs are coming out pretty heavy. So, you know, we've got our crypto scans that we've built over the years. I mean, we've been trading this stuff for a decade almost. Yeah, about a decade since 2014. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know, quite some time. We started covering it. You know, I wouldn't say I was trading it. I was holding some Bitcoin in 2014, but we really started covering it in our shop in 2016. So even then, you know, relatively early. So, you know, for us, we've come a long way, and we do a lot of like on-chain analytics as well, which I really, really like a lot. Like, because of the transparency of the blockchain, there's so much more data that we get in cryptos that we don't have in traditional assets like stocks and bonds and commodities. I would kill to have some of the data that we have in cryptocurrencies in traditional assets. I would kill for that data.